The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome back to Get Up. We're coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Zach Lowe with me to talk some NBA. We got all kinds of people here to talk football. So let's get up with a jaw-dropping performance from Ja Morant. We're going to show you the dunk. We're going to show you the game winner, the fourth quarter rally. It was an incredible night in Memphis. Plus, KD is called out. The Nets superstar is facing serious criticism after a catastrophic end to Brooklyn's season. And the Joneses are dishing details on Dallas's draft day decisions. But should Cowboys fans be happy with what they're hearing? Plenty of NFL to get to, but we start with the game of the night in the NBA. It is Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Timberwolves in game five of their first round series. We're going to start in the third quarter because that is when this happened. Ja Morant dunking it with authority, putting Malik Beasley on one of the all-time posters. That cut the Minnesota lead at the time to 85-74. Now we move to the fourth quarter. The Timberwolves are up by 10 points, and Karl-Anthony Towns is just going to stand there and casually drain a three-pointer, and then he's going to shush the Memphis crowd. The Timberwolves are up by 13 points, about 5:50 to play. Grizzlies down by 7. Dylan Brooks misses a three. Brandon Clark gets the rebound and puts it back. That cuts the lead to 5. Later, Grizzlies down 3. Morant misses a floater. There's a scramble in the paint. Clark banking it in off the glass. Grizzlies down 99-98. The bench is fired up. The crowd is fired up. 4.5 minutes to play. Same score. Pat Beverly of Minnesota drives. Going to make a floater in the paint. He's going to go back there telling Ja Morant he's too small to guard him. Timberwolves up 3. Less than 30 seconds later, Morant drives to the paint, shoots and makes the bucket, and he gives it right back to Pat Bev. Grizzlies now down 101 to 100. 110 left. Grizzlies down by 2. Tyus Jones misses a 3. Big rebound. Clark gets it out to Morant, who makes the 3. Grizzlies now up by a point, and the fans are hoping they can finish this. Under 10 seconds to play. T-Wolves down by 3. Anthony Edwards is going to get a pass in the corner and make this ridiculous shot to tie the game. And then this happened.
Gets it to Morant. Morant lays it in with 1 second remaining. No timeouts for Minnesota. Grizzlies lead it by 2. Grizzlies got a matchup. Towns, a desperation heave. Hammer, nail, coffin. This baby is over. And the Grizzlies go to Minneapolis with a 3-2 series lead.
Special moment for Ja Morant and the Grizzlies. Morant finished with 30 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists. Grizzlies win 111-109 and take a 3-2 lead in the best of seven series. Morant put the team on his back. He scored the final 13 points of the game for Memphis. That is the most consecutive points scored by a player age 22 or younger to close out a playoff game since a guy named LeBron James went off and scored the final 25 points in game five of the 2007 conference finals against the Pistons. So this game was clearly the game of the night, and Ja Morant's performance may be the performance of the playoffs so far. When we have a dunk like this, I think it's good to have Vince Carter on the show because he knows something about incredible poster dunks. So Vince, what was your thought when you saw that one?
I mean, guys, I've had a chance to see this a couple of times, and not only did he just posterize Malik Beasley, but his ability to float in the air. And if you notice, he's leaning and his body's kind of trending, going to the left a little bit because he's trying to avoid the charge as well. Yes, I wanted to put you on a poster, Malik Beasley, but I want to do that while not getting a charge call. And he did that. Game, set, match right there. I mean, that is, look at that, just taking off. Yes, they made contact, but he's hitting the left side of his, the right side of his body because he's leaning to avoid that. And not many people can say they can do that.
No, I would think not. Zach, can you do that?
No, I like how Vince is able to analyze what's going on. I'm just like, yo, a dude just flew in the air.
Oh, no, it's his right side, and then you got a twist. like any of us can do that. What were your thoughts on that play?
I mean, it's incredible. It changed the whole momentum of the game, and Ja Morant is just relentless. You're not stopping him. He's going to get to the rim. He's going to get to the line. 17 free throw attempts, 45 minutes for the series. Memphis is plus 28 with Ja on the floor, minus 3 with Ja on the bench. They have zero offense without him.
We can't stop playing this.
We can. It's impossible.
But the play at the end of the game where he gets the inbound pass and then makes the layup to win it, we can't stop playing the dunk. At some point,
that's
we will.
Still not it.
Here we show you. Here we go. The play at the end of the game to win it. Vince, how does Minnesota let Ja Morant, of all people, get the ball on that inbounds pass?
It's just defensive mistakes. Young guys just going through the moment, being in the moment, and just not disciplined. If you're going to make that gamble, if you're Anthony Edwards and make that gamble over the top side, you better get the ball. You know, if he's under Ja Morant, he takes a tough fadeaway jump shot for the win, possibly contested, you go to overtime. Instead, he catches it with a clear path where he can be athletic, game over.
What are we seeing here, Zach, with Ja Morant and this Memphis team? I mean, both these teams are very young. The series is, it's great to watch, but it's not the tightest basketball we've ever seen played in terms of, you know, avoiding fouls and stuff. What are we watching here with Ja?
We're watching a young superstar prove the moment is not too big for him. I mean, Ja's been ready for this since last season when he lit up the Jazz. He didn't have the teammates to carry it over the finish line. And Minnesota's learning, right? And this series has been a ball. It's chaos. It's turnovers. It's dudes running around dunking. And just, I want to shout out, I'm glad we've shown Brandon Clark a lot in these highlights because they are dead in the water without him in this series. He's been sensational for them with Jaren Jackson Jr. on and off the floor with foul trouble. Brandon Clark has been the second most important player on their team. Maybe third. Desmond Bane's been great too.
He sure has. Look, it's been a great series and it continues. Minnesota's got a chance to tie it up in game 6 on Friday. The Brooklyn Nets do not have such a chance. They were eliminated on Monday night by the Boston Celtics in a first-round sweep. Let's take a look at what happened in the Nets season. They were the favorites, preseason favorites, at Caesars Sportsbook on October 19th to win the whole thing. But as you know, Kyrie Irving, unvaccinated, not allowed to play in New York City till March. Then in February, Brooklyn shipped James Harden and Paul Millsap to Philadelphia for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and 2 first-round picks. Simmons did not suit up for the Nets for even one single minute. Then on Monday, the Celtics finished off the Nets in the sweep. This is the first time either Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving was swept in a playoff series in their careers. And Stephen A. Smith was in this room yesterday talking about Kevin Durant's leadership. And here's what he said.
Kevin Durant is one of the greatest players in NBA history, and I consider to be the best player in the world today, regardless of what just happened in this series, even though it was bad. I think exhaustion played the part. I think we're going to learn that he was a bit injured in this series as well. As great as he is as a player, he's that poor as a leader. You're the face of this franchise, and you've been deferential because you're deferring to your boy, Kyrie. That's your man. He's incredibly loyal and what have you. You have to step up as a leader and show that you are truly deserving of being the face of a franchise by holding people accountable.
And I don't know, Zach. I mean, I'm watching the Nets. I wasn't thinking Kevin Durant was like at the top of the list of problems. What are your thoughts on what Stephen A. had to say?
I get what he's saying, right? KD is not an in-your-face, get-everything-in-order kind of culture tone setter, but I thought it was harsh to say poor leadership. And I just think on the hierarchy of things to blame for what is going wrong with the Nets this season, KD might be like number 79 because of how he played in this series. It's pretty low. Can KD get Kyrie Irving vaccinated? I don't know. Can he get James Harden to show up in like tip-top shape? I don't know. Can he get James Harden to not mope his way out of town once the Kyrie Irving situation grows chaotic? I don't know if there's a leader in the NBA. I don't know if Damian Lillard could do it. I don't know if LeBron could do it. I don't know if Steph could do it. It's just a different kind of vibe, a different kind of group of guys, a really crazy set of circumstances. To me, Kevin Durant was the metronome. He was the only reliable thing about the Brooklyn Nets this season. And he was a guy who we were all saying he's the MVP of the league 2 or 3 months into the season. So I find it hard to place any of the blame. If we got to place blame, I find it hard to place blame on him.
All of that said, though, he did not, and I'm sure he would admit, have his best series against Boston. Vince, when you watched him in that series, what stood out to you about his performance?
I think KD looks shell-shocked and a little rattled. I mean, you go into a series and, you know, you look at the games that you played in the regular season, so you're kind of prepared for it. But the defensive intensity and the level of play by the Boston Celtics were next level. I mean, they were just bumping him, pushing him, just trying to get under his skin and just getting his head a little bit to get him off his game. And now when he's looking around, he's turning the ball over, not hitting shots, getting off the ball because of double teams and other guys aren't making shots. He grew frustrated in the three games that we saw. Yes, he had a breakout game in game four, what, 39 points or so. But it's just, he just looked out of sorts, you know, and that's this was the thing. And I saw it from the beginning, like, wow, when's the last time you've seen a KD looking like this on the court, more so than on social media?
Yeah, look, I mean, lots to figure out there for the Nets. But, Zach, after the game, Kyrie had some comments about looking forward to managing the franchise alongside Durant, and he named some guys in the front office. What were your thoughts on hearing those comments?
Yeah, I don't think it went over super well around the NBA. And, look, Kyrie Irving's a superstar. I had him on my All-NBA third team last season. He's a superstar. He's not a Kevin Durant-level superstar who's an MVP candidate, that kind of stuff. But superstars, of course, they're going to be consulted on decisions of import for any franchise. That's how the NBA works. Superstars drive winning. He hasn't driven enough winning to make a comment like that. Instead of managing the franchise, I think step one is all these guys other than Durant have to just play for the franchise. He's played 103 games in three seasons. He's been absent from the team way too much. They've won one, all this hype, all this talk, all this hot air we're spilling. They've won one playoff series in three seasons. So, like, they've got a lot of big decisions to make this summer with their outgoing free agents, with how they're going to stock the roster and all that, with Kyrie's player option. Let's focus on that stuff, focus on getting on the court and seeing what the team is.
Vince, what did you make of Kyrie's comments? What do you think about his future there with the Nets?
Zach is spot on. I think as superstar players, yes, they should be consulted with, and you should, you know, value their opinions of players they want to play with, and you just see if it fits and meshes with what you have already or what you're trying to construct. But we've seen in the past when players are kind of controlling who should play where, what has happened, i.e. the Lakers. So I think first and foremost, they need to also, well, they need to bring in Steve Nash or decide if they're going to keep Steve Nash, because I think as a coach, it's important to see or know what type of players you want to coach or what style of play you want to play and coach. And they go find guys that fit that style, which will help the coach first and foremost in your franchise. So I don't agree with Kyrie as far as they should run things moving forward.
Yeah, one thing I did want to mention before we put a bow on this, the Ben Simmons thing. They trade for him. They thought he was going to be a helper. He ends up not playing.
Yeah.
If he comes back and plays next year, like what effect does that have on this team and its chances?
Yeah, I'm done with this. I'm done with it.
All right. I said
when they got him, he's a perfect fit. Like on paper, yeah, sure. I said on paper, he's a perfect fit. He's their Draymond Green. Doesn't need to handle the ball. Doesn't need to run pick and roll. Run the floor, play defense, rebound, set screens, spray the ball out to all the shooting, a glorious amount of shooting around him. Theoretically, it's a great fit. I'm done now until we see it. Until we see these three guys on the floor, until we see Joe Harris back, until we see the team around them, I'm done anointing them. And if all things go well, title contender, until we see it, they are not in that conversation.
Long way to go before we find out what, if any, impact Ben Simmons can have on next year's Nets. More from these guys later in the show. But when we come back, all is not well in Philadelphia. What do Joel Embiid and James Harden need to do to avoid a historic playoff collapse against Toronto? And with NFL Draft Day fast approaching, could we finally see a trade for Deebo Samuel? We have the very latest on the 49ers' disgruntled wide receiver.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Come on, get up.
Unbeatable Plays is brought to you by Xfinity, and we just honestly we cannot stop showing you this Ja Morant dunk from last night on Malik Beasley. Jeff Saturday, arbiter of all things pancake. Does this rise to the level of NBA pancake?
This is a three pancaker. Why? Because he's in the air about 30 seconds, which there's no way I can even imagine being able to do that. And he's over another human being. I think his head is as high as the backboard, the top of the backboard, as he goes down and dunks that thing up. That is a thing of beauty.
Unbelievable. From every angle, just unbelievable.
Just nasty. Just nasty.
Just okay. Nasty.
Could you do that ever in your life?
No. Why would you ask a question like that? Hey, let's talk about the NFL draft, something we can do. Let's get our crew on the record with some bold predictions. Jeff Saturday, start.
Evan Neal to the Jags. Trevor Lawrence, their quarterback, generational, all the things that went, you know, said last year. How about we protect him? Cam Robinson, who's kind of struggling. I know they extended him or gave him the fifth-year option. I think he's the most balanced tackle in the draft. Pass rush. Run game, all of it there. I think he's the guy that I would pick first. Give me some stability, that left tackle. And he can play right tackle, bump inside. He gives you a lot of versatility if you needed it.
Last time an offensive lineman won one was 2013. Jeremy Fowler, your bold prediction.
Yes, Dan, it's time to replace Tyreek Hill. And the Chiefs are loaded with 12 picks, two first-rounders. I predict they move up somewhere in the early teens. Get a receiver. Jameson Williams, you see him there. He looks perfect for this offense to replace Hill. And so if there's a sort of a run after pick 10 or so, it costs a lot to move up, but I could see the Chiefs trying to package those first two round picks plus more to get up there.
Chiefs have 12 total picks, so plenty with which to move up if that's what they want to do. Sacho, bold prediction.
Your favorite player will be on a different team come Friday. We're going to see at least three different players be traded, switch teams, on Thursday. Last year, we saw three guys, Jalen Ramsey, we saw Orlando Brown, we saw Jamal Adams all get traded on day one. I think we'll see three, and I think one of those three will be Deebo Samuel.
Deebo Samuel of the 49ers, star receiver, told our Jeff Darlington last week that he wanted out. He wanted the 49ers to trade him. So, Jeremy, what's the latest? Is he going to get his wish?
Yes, I just checked in on this. Deebo is hoping for the same thing in the next 36 hours. He hopes that he gets dealt. And I'm told the 49ers are at least listening to offers. That provides some hope to Samuel, who I'm told is dug in. But talking to teams, they are skeptical on whether the 49ers are really highly motivated to do this. The 49ers love this guy on and off the field. They really don't want to move him. It would take a massive haul, probably a first round pick as a baseline, but I've heard the Jets have some interest. Lions, Packers have some interest. There are probably some others.
I think a lot of people, Sacho, were surprised when they found out he wanted out because he's been so good there. You have a theory.
Well, running backs take a beating, and we saw Deebo Samuel. When the San Francisco 49ers were successful last year, it was when Deebo Samuel started to run the ball. He averaged 7 yards, 7 carries per game versus less than one in their successful games, right? 9-3 in the last 10 week 10 and on. If I'm Deebo Samuel, I'm thinking about my career, my long-term career, and what's best for me and my family. And what's best for Deebo Samuel is not taking all that pounding as a running back. Yeah. And so go somewhere where you can be a full-time receiver and still get your touches and be a playmaker that you are.
Okay, this is hard for me. Deebo Samuel needs to get paid. No doubt San Francisco should pay him, put him in that top shelf, $23 million a year, whatever that number is for wide receivers. Let's get him paid. The idea that you're going to pay him that amount of money and the haul that Jeremy is talking about, it would take whether it's draft pick and money to get him done. He's asking me not to do the things that make him as vital to your offense as a player, right? Like the reason he is so good is because he can be versatile. You can put him in the backfield and match him up or run him. You can put him outside. You can move him over your entire. So as an offensive coordinator, it's his playmaking ability, not just his wide receiver ability. Like if I was going to say, is he a top 5 playmaker in the NFL? Yes. Is he a top 5 receiver? Probably not. So if I'm looking at him from how much I'm going to have to invest in him, I would say I want him to have those touches. The guy averages 6 yards a carry in the backfield. That is an enormous boost to your offense. So if you're telling me, hey, I can find other ways to for him to touch the ball, you cannot find other ways as simply as taking the pressure off your quarterback, turn around and hand it to a guy who's going to go get you 6 yards. So when you talk about longevity of career, I appreciate that. If I'm making $100 million over the next 5 years, there's still the opportunity for some type of crazy, catastrophic, whatever. But I don't think seven – I don't think they'll get seven. I think part of that seven carries was because of the injuries to the running backs. So if he gets 4 carries a game, that abuse to me does not justify not wanting to do that role.
That's where we disagree, because the point that you made at the beginning is a point that I agree with. The point of, man, you can hand him the ball and he's a big-time playmaker at running back. I think that Kyle Shanahan and San Francisco's offense understand this. And so if we saw San Francisco was 9-3 since week 10 when Deebo Samuel started getting more
for
carries,
sure,
right? Seven a game. Why, if you want to win more games, and we talk about him being so dynamic, give him the ball more at running back.
It's diminishing returns, though. You and I both know.
How?
Because if you're getting him 10 and you're telling me, or if you're giving him 15 rushes and he's taking the beating, then his returns are going to diminish.
They're thinking about getting offensive production.
So you and I both know there's a reason you rotate running backs anyway.
Yes.
You're not going to have this dude carrying the ball 20 times a game. He's not a running back.
And that's
silly to say that he. If he gets 4 touches a game from the backfield or 7 touches from the – he's not going to get 15 next week. Shanahan's not going to do that. Offensive coordinators want to find the best way and the most valuable way, not beat the guy to the ground so he's not as productive.
So, I mean, do teams that are interested, teams you're talking to, view him as, hey, we can bring him in and be a receiver? Or do you think teams have the imagination to use him the way that San Francisco does?
It's probably somewhere in the middle. With the Jets, they have the Mike LaFleur connection, right? He was in San Francisco with Deebo Samuel. Has won games with him, so he would know how to use him while taking some of the pressure off him a little bit. I think the key is to just not throw him in the backfield and say, here you go, pound it between the tackles. But here's the problem. I think talking to people around the league, they agree with both of you. They believe he's not a top five receiver if you just put him at that spot. They think DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, some of those guys are probably better. But if you're talking about a generator of points and yards, he's top five, no question.
Real quick, what are we talking about? You said the 49ers won a lot for him. What are we talking about there? What will it take?
Well, they need a first-round pick this year.
They do.
They need a first-round pick next year because of that Trey Lance trade. So they need to make up at least some of that gap.
Absolutely. The Niners, you could probably get their attention with a first-round pick or two. We'll see what happens with Deebo, if anything, over the next couple of days. One of the fascinating draft storylines. When we come back, though, KD is facing criticism after the Brooklyn Nets' early exit. Jalen Rose will be here to discuss whether that criticism is warranted and if Brooklyn can turn it around next season. But before that, Zach Lowe is going to answer this question from Sneaky Hembo. Who owns the Grizzlies' career scoring record in the playoffs? Zach, we're looking for most total points, not points per game. So mull that over, and we'll be back.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up, and Sneaky Hembo has this one for Zach Lowe. Who owns the Grizzlies' career scoring record in the playoffs?
I don't trust Hembo. I don't trust him.
You shouldn't.
I feel like it's too obvious, but I can't think of a better name than Zach Randolph. It has to be Zach Randolph, right?
It is, in fact, Zach Randolph.
That wasn't sneaky.
1,058 career points. Second place is Mark Gasol with 1,013. Ja Morant is already fifth on that list, so a ways to go. And part of the way he got there was this performance last night. It was our game of the night in the NBA. Ja Morant and the Grizzlies taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves in Game 5 of their first-round series. Third quarter, Ja Morant with a dunk. You've seen the dunk. You can't see it too much. Malik Beasley can. He's on the poster for all time. Anyway, that cut the Minnesota lead to 11 at the time. Fourth quarter, Timberwolves still up 10, and Karl Anthony Towns is just going to casually drain this three-pointer. Go back up, shushing the crowd. Looking good for Minnesota, but when the 10 seconds to play, Memphis is up three, so Anthony Edwards has to hit this incredible shot just to tie the game. Under 4 seconds to play now. The inbounds is going to go, you guessed it, to Ja Morant, who drives the lane and hits the layup for the win. Incredible game, incredible moment for Morant and the Grizzlies. He had 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 9 assists. Grizzlies win and take a 3-2 lead in their best of seven series. And look who's here to join us to talk some hoops. It is Jalen Rose.
Yeah.
Jalen, we were talking last hour about where does this rank on the best playoff dunks of all time? Your thoughts?
Wow. I'm showing my age here. I've seen a few playoff dunks. How about Michael Jordan twinkle toes on the left sideline around my brother Charles Oakley and over the top of Patrick Ewing?
Oh, we have
you
that.
You know, what about that one, Dan? What about that, Zach? Get low. Get low.
Yeah.
The cat, that's the black cat right there on the baseline going over another Hall of Famer. I got a couple of more for you guys if you're up for it. How about Sean Kemp against Alton Liston from the cradle down the lane and over the top of Alton Liston? And if you like Loose Ends, the group, this is You Can't Stop the Rain When It Starts to Fall. How about that one? High top fade, Sean Kemp, when Seattle still had a team. And by the way, they definitely deserve to have another one. I got another one for you guys, if it's okay. How about Scottie Pippen? I'm not picking on you, Patrick Ewing.
That's mine.
It's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. Scottie Pippen, one of the all-time greats over another one of the all-time greats. It just walks over and walk it like I'm talking. You know what I'm saying? It's like Allen Iverson did Tyronn Lue, except it was a dunk. You know what I mean? And then Spike Lee, or poor Spike Lee, look at how much he's endured with those Knicks. So much that he's going to Nets games now. But in all honesty, Ja Morant's dunk last night was spectacular. He woke up yesterday against Malik Beasley and chose violence. And the thing about this, it was needed because it actually got him going. And when Patrick Beverly scored late and said that they were too little, Ja Morant took that personal. And on that final play right there, Anthony Edwards, a terrific young player who just made a big three, you can't do that gamble. You gotta stay within your principles. You gotta keep Ja in front of you. You gotta make him score over the top. But for Ja to turn the corner and finish the way he did with his left hand, it was just spectacular.
It really was. So much from that game to break down. We've talked about the dunk. We've talked about the finish. But, I mean, overall, Ja Morant just sort of getting going when they absolutely needed it to just says a lot about the player, right?
Relentless. Relentless. You're not keeping him from the rim no matter what scheme you use. You're not keeping him off the line, and they couldn't keep him off the court. The Grizzlies couldn't in the second half of the game. They needed every second he could give him, and he is up to everything.
Jalen, what did Ja Morant show you last night?
He showed me that not only is he a superstar, but this team has now blended his ability to take over a game, in particular in the playoffs, with their regular season success without him. The first couple of games, they were trying to figure a way to ease their superstar back into it. But now all of a sudden, they put the ball in his hands and they allow him to win the game for them. This has been a terrific series.
It has been one of the most fun stories of the playoffs so far. Unlike the story of the Brooklyn Nets, who went from title favorites just months ago to being swept in the first round by the Boston Celtics. Nets superstar Kevin Durant struggled in this series, and our Stephen A. Smith was on Get Up yesterday to say this about Durant and leadership.
Kevin Durant is one of the greatest players in NBA history, and I consider to be the best player in the world today, regardless of what just happened in this series, even though it was bad. I think exhaustion played the part. I think we're going to learn that he was a bit injured in this series as well. As great as he is as a player, he's that poor as a leader. You're the face of this franchise, and you've been deferential. because you're deferring to your boy, Kyrie. That's your man. He's incredibly loyal and what have you. You have to step up as a leader and show that you are truly deserving of being the face of a franchise by holding people accountable.
Jalen, your thoughts on Stephen A's comments?
First off, and I tell Stephen A this all of the time, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player in the league, number one. Number two, there are some accuracies there, and here's why. Because, and I saw you, Zach, earlier talking about leadership, and Steph Curry was used as an example. Remember at the beginning of this year, Andrew Wiggins was not vaccinated. And sometimes you got to do something you never didn't want to do to get something you never had. And he chose to get vaccinated. Don't think he wasn't pressured by his teammates. And you know how he got rewarded? He was starting in this year's All-Star game for the first time in his career. That was his reward. And I want to quote the great American philosopher, Ricky Rose, about this one. When you a hustler, you do anything to win. Especially when you're a part of a team dynamic, even if that means a sacrifice like getting vaccinated. When he chose not to do that, he told everybody it became a distraction, not only for the team, but for him, but for KD, James Harden, led to Harden being traded, didn't give their team a true chance to be higher in the standings. So now all of a sudden, the fatigue that Stephen A. talks about will set in. You know why? Because on March 23rd, you got to scramble to try to make the playoffs. And now every game means something. And since that date, Kyrie Irving and KD were first and second in the NBA in minutes played. And one other point I want to make. There were 16 teams that made the playoffs this year. The Nets are the only one that didn't win a game. When Kyrie played with LeBron, he didn't have to be the leader. When KD went to the Warriors, he said one of the things he wanted to do was be a part of a team that played together, moved the ball, and he was happy that he didn't have to be the leader. Well, in Brooklyn, that's not the case. They will be required to show a level of leadership that they haven't had to show in their careers, and this year they clearly came up vastly short as they are limited, as they are eliminated in the playoffs via sweep.
I mean, a lot of interesting points obviously there, but I mean, the one that stood out to me, does more leadership from Kevin Durant convince Kyrie Irving to get vaccinated? I mean, like is it fair to expect that?
It's impossible to speculate, but I don't know that Andrew Wiggins and Kyrie Irving can be compared in that sense in terms of how reachable they are. I mean, I'm sure the Nets tried maybe not the same methods of the as the Warriors did, but it's a good point. It's a fair point. I just don't know that they're comparable and how reachable they are in that particular sense.
You know, after the game the other night, Jalen, Kyrie made some comments about looking forward to helping manage the team with Kevin Durant. Zach thought those were a little tone deaf in terms of post-game comments. What'd you think?
Well, the elephant in the room is that he didn't mention Steve Nash, their head coach. And I don't believe Steve Nash is going to be fired, but when he says that, it makes everybody, it reminds people of the fact that when they joined up to play with the Nets, Kyrie suggested that they basically didn't need a coach. And when I look at the Celtics versus the Nets, the difference in the best players on the Celtics, Tatum, Brown, Smart, they allow Ime Udoka to actually coach them and challenge them and make them a better basketball team as the season progressed. Are you guys old enough to remember when there were some idiots that felt like Tatum and Brown should be broken up? That was actually this season. And so they put it together. That was coaching. A first-year head coach in Ime Udoka. That was the difference between those two squads to me, coaching and allowing your great players to be coached.
How much of this do you hang on the coach?
The coach has to own some of it, but to me, again, Steve Nash got to coach a team in 2 years. He's been managing all these issues. I don't know that he's had an opportunity to really implement what he wants to implement. And a good point that Jalen made about Kyrie leaving Steve Nash's name out of that sort of list. He did the same thing in a monologue that he had before they had traded a half their roster for James Harden last season, where he started listing players that, you know, were part of the core. And he either accidentally or on purpose left off a couple of names, and it ruffled some feathers inside the organization. And here it is happening again. I agree with Jalen. I think it's more likely than not that Steve Nash comes back next year, but that's going to be up to Joe Tsai. Ultimately, that's up to the owner. If the owner decides it has to be done, it has to be done. But I think he's coming back.
Of course, the big move during the season was the trade of James Harden to Philadelphia. Brought back a lot, but the key piece seemed to be Ben Simmons, Jalen, who never suited up for this team. What can they expect or look forward to from Simmons, seen here after his big win at Augusta earlier this month?
I always felt the best course of action for the Sixers and the Nets would be to do a James Harden and Ben Simmons deal after this season. And here's why. Ben Simmons hasn't played since last June. He said he has some mental issues. And also, he's dealing with a back issue that required him to take a shot. So therefore, you do it in the offseason where you can get him into your building, introduce him to your therapist, introduce him to your coaching, get him up to your system, get him more comfortable with who he is as a man, mentally and psychologically, and then ease him into a summer, ease him into a training camp, and ease him into a season. To shotgun him into the season and then say, oh, we're going to play game four when they're about to get swept, I knew that wasn't going to happen. Who thought that Ben Simmons was going to get out there in the fourth game after they just lost three games and all of a sudden feel like he was going to be a game changer? I always thought it was unrealistic. And I will say this, I'm disappointed like everybody else to not see Ben Simmons play this year. But let's not dismiss when a player says that they have mental and psychological issues. Kevin Love came out and talked about it. DeMar DeRozan came out and talked about it. That's a real issue. For those that haven't played on a high level, imagine this. The two things you do when you walk into a gym, you dribble the ball or you shoot the ball. I always felt Ben Simmons was A, shooting with the incorrect hand. He finishes at the hoop with his right, but he shoots at the free throw line with his left. And then number two, when you don't attempt shots outside of the paint, there is something psychologically there. I hope he's able to get it together this offseason and return next year.
We all hope that, and certainly the Brooklyn Nets do as well. He would be key to their success moving forward if he can get back on the court. Jalen, thanks so much for joining us. When we come back, we're going to talk more NFL. The Joneses are dishing on Dallas's draft day plans, but what should Cowboys fans think about what Jerry and Steven are saying?
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Start your mornings with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern. They answer the pressing questions around the sports world.
Let's talk about Steph's legacy.
They're going to probably draft an explosive guy.
And deliver their hot takes on breaking news and new developments.
The Lakers are one of the worst jobs in the NBA.
Tune in every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
All right, we mentioned the NFL drafts. One day away, it starts tomorrow, and our crew is going to fix your favorite team through the draft right now. Jeff Saturday, what do the Green Bay Packers need to do in the draft?
Wide receiver, or maybe even a couple. Listen, a couple years ago, they drafted Jordan Love when everybody thought they were going to go receiver. Mm-hmm. They won't make this mistake again. Get a wide receiver. Listen, you think about Rodgers. He's ending his career, coming close to the end of his career. They need to win now. They have to have wide receiver help. Olave out of Ohio State makes a lot of sense to me. To help Watkins, Cobby, and Amari Rodgers out
there. Yeah, fortunately, no major fallout from that Jordan Love pick that I recall. Exactly. Sacho, what do the Chiefs need to do?
They need to go get this man on the screen, Jameson Williams. And how do you do that? You turn two picks into one pick. Kansas City Chiefs have 29 and 30, two first-round picks. Trade those into one. They also have 2 second-round picks. Maybe you can get another playmaker on defense, a guy like David Ojabo. Maybe he slides a little bit because of injury. Turn those 2 picks into 1 pick and get some playmakers on your football team.
Chiefs have 12 total picks. Hard to see 12 rookies making the Chiefs. Expect them to move around. Jordan Reed, what do the Giants need to do?
Jeff's going to love to hear me saying this. You have to fortify the trenches. Yeah. Get an offensive or a defensive lineman. The Giants have 2 first-round picks inside of the top 10. What I'm thinking historically of the New York Giants, O.C. Umanure, Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck, it starts up front with the New York Giants. You have to figure out a way to get an offensive or defensive lineman.
Preach it!
Certainly make the Giants fans and Jeff Saturday happy. Jeremy Fowler, what do the Cowboys need to do?
All right, Dan, Dallas is taking a deep dive on pass rushers, interior defensive line in this draft. They want to be all in on Dan Quinn. They love the movement that they saw year one, year two. They know they have to load up, especially losing Randy Gregory. And Jeff, I do expect some interior offensive line help as well. Zion Johnson from Boston College could be tempting there. They got some free agency plans too, some contingencies. If they don't go pass rush heavy early, they could sign like a Jason Pierre-Paul sometime in early May.
Cowboys taking guards and centers. This is Jeff Saturday's favorite draft of
everybody's
all time.
Everybody's favorite, not just mine.
No one else besides you.
No, everybody.
Speaking of the Cowboys, this is what Stephen Jones had to say yesterday about the state of their roster as the draft approaches.
We won't get into evaluating any of the players in here, but I will say this. I mean, free agency's not over. I don't think we have any musts going into the draft.
Jeff Saturday, do you agree with him?
I disagree with him.
I thought you might.
Listen, I think every team has musts, but I appreciate the calmness, right? And we're a day away from the draft, so it doesn't get a must until then. But listen, you just talked about it. They lose Randy Gregory. They lose 2 wide receivers. They lose 2 starting offensive linemen in Williams and Lyle Collins. To think that they're better now than they were at the end of last season, I would say is silly. They have to add and bolster through the draft. And guys who can play right away, especially on the offensive line to me and that edge rusher, they got to find that. I mean, they have to have help. They were not physical at the end of last year, which you think about when you're paying that much money to your running backs. You got to be physical up front. They were not. They need some help there.
Jordan, our draft analyst, who are some guys that would fit that description that might be available to the Cowboys when they're picking at 24?
Yeah, there's 3 guys that make a lot of sense to me, and Jeremy touched on one a little bit earlier. Zion Johnson from Boston College is one that could be there. He was really good at the Senior Bowl. That was his first time playing center, and I think center is one area where they could look to address. Tyler Biadasz is just kind of a guy along the interior, so they could address that. Tyler Linderbaum of Iowa could be another guy that they look. And then also there's some other players that I really like, but those two are really the 2 guys that I like.
Yeah. Sasha, what do you think about the Cowboys and Stephen Jones' assessment of the roster?
I don't disagree with it, right? When he says must, there's some teams that really need a whole lot of help. The Cowboys aren't one of those teams. Yes, they had some deficiencies on the offensive line, but they were still the number one ranked offense. Now, are there issues to address? Yes. I think receivers is just as important, if not more important than offensive line, maybe because I play defense, so I don't need the offensive lineman on my head.
Of course.
But I think a guy like Treylon Burks would be a huge fit at number 24 who still might be available.
You know, the last couple of years they've sat tight and taken – or actually they traded back last year from Micah Parsons. They end up getting the best player available on their board. When you talk to people around the Cowboys, I mean, are they as calm as Stephen sounds?
Yeah, because they've been good at that. I mean, they let him fall there. They let CeeDee Lamb fall to him. The Dallas Cowboys and the Chargers are both really good at just sitting tight, whether it's 17, 25, and saying, who's going to be the best guy that for some reason somebody doesn't take? So there's going to be an elite player. They might go receiver if, like one of the top guys somehow slides to the mid-20s. Or look out for some of the Georgia guys. You got Jordan Davis, defensive tackle, Devontae Wyatt. He's had some character concerns, really good player. So could be interesting if those guys fall.
Yeah, get used to hearing the names of Georgia defensive players tomorrow night. I think we're going to see a lot of those. But, yeah, Jeff, I mean, you mentioned the Cowboys and offensive line. This has been their staple for so long, but everybody needs a refresh.
Yeah,
right?
and listen, when you think about the Cowboys, to your point, you always thought about dominant offensive line play. They're going to go and they're going to push. They're going to exert their will. I get it, right? Their numbers look good. Don't forget they play in the NFC least, right? So they average 34 points against those teams. So when you think about playing, they're not playing to win their division. They're playing to win playoff games and compete for a Super Bowl. With that offensive line as it stands today, they will not be competitive because when it comes to the bigger games, they won't show up. You talked about Linderbaum. You talked about Johnson, very technically sound players, and even Green out of A&M. And the versatility, whether they're playing guard or moving around, they're going to need players who can move around because you see the way they've been banged up at that position. Guys go down, and it's like the next man up isn't nearly as good. So when I look at this football team, are they sitting in a good seat? Absolutely, because they're a playoff caliber team. They do have needs that need to be met, though, in this draft that are impact players this year.
Yeah, no musts maybe, but some places they could use some help. Do we have the sound from Jerry? There was another funny bit of sound from the Cowboys press conference yesterday. Jerry Jones talking about who makes the final call on draft night when they're making the pick.
There's a lot of talk in this business about who makes the call, who actually makes the call. Okay. Taco was Steven's call. Parson is my call.
I mean, why else do we have kids if not to blame them for our troubles? By the way, last time Dallas took an offensive lineman in the first round, 2014, that was the third time in 4 years that they did that. Our action-packed April rolls on tomorrow night with the first round of the NFL draft beginning at 8 Eastern. You can check that out here on ESPN. We'll have every pick. But Friday night, the NBA playoffs continue. When we come back, we'll finish up, and then first take is next. They're going to talk about Ja Morant and how far the Grizzlies can go in the postseason. You'll hear from Stephen A. Smith, Christine Williamson, Jay Williams, and Chris Mad Dog Russo when we are done here at the top of the hour on First Take.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
The NFL draft is tomorrow, and we will have every pick once again on ESPN, along with our usual expert analysis. Draft's also available on NFL Network, and ABC's coverage focuses on the prospects' journey to the draft. Our first round coverage begins tomorrow at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, with all 3 days also on ESPN Deportes. So you have that to look forward to. We had a lot of fun here.
Yes, we did.
Get up today. Love being in the studio with so many people. Love the energy. First Take is coming up
next.
Thanks for watching.
Yes!